I'd like to welcome you to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Welcome, Sherry.
Well, thank you, sir. It's good to be here.
It's good to be here. You've just been listening to Discovery Channel with Angie, and you're listening now to KZSU Stanford at 90.1 on the FM dial. You can hear us at that number locally in the Bay Area, or you can pick us up over the internet at kzsulive.stanford.edu. Sherry's been a Zen student and teacher for
Many years.
Many years?
In Zen, we call it kalpas.
Kalpas?
Yes.
I know you're going to share with our listeners what a kalpa is.
I guess it actually only feels that way. A kalpa, there's a huge mountain of granite. It's so tall that it's up above the clouds. You can only guess where the top of it must be.
Yeah.
And once every 10,000 years, an angel comes down and she rushes the top of the mountain with her wing. And when the mountain is gone, a kalpa has passed.
Wow.
Yeah. So kalpa is Buddhist for a really, really, really long time.
Really, really, really long time. Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you want to join our conversation today, we're going to be talking about whatever you want to talk about. You can reach us by phone here, and that number is 650-723-9010. If you prefer to reach us by email, you can send us an email to openair@kzsu.org. And in the future, we'll be doing a special email-only show where people can send in email questions on any topic, and Sherry will be addressing them on air.
Very wonderful.
Wonderful. And we have a quote for the day, which is that this is from The Key, a book that Sherry wrote a few years back. And the quote is, "No one, no thing can take your peace, your joy, your adequacy away from you. You have to give it up voluntarily."
Mm-hmm.
And what does that mean?
And I think the next line is something like, "And we give it up so easily for almost anything, red lights and spots on the clothing and phone calls that we miss and
yes,
all sorts of things that are very odd." And what it points at is that the peace, the joy, the adequacy is our essential nature. It's what's there when we stop doing everything else. In order not to be in touch with that, we have to be focused on something in the past or in the future. When we're just right here, our experience of life is the peace, the joy, the adequacy. So that's who we are.
Yeah.
That's who we are and what we are. If
right.
we give that up, it's because we choose to do that. Now, it doesn't always feel like a choice because, of course, we are habituated to distraction and to living in conditioned mind and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a matter of choice,
mm-hmm.
ultimately.
Right. So peace is our birthright.
Yes.
And at some point, as we grow up, as we're socialized, it seems like we begin to assume that our peace comes from something external.
That's right. So I leave what I want to try to get what I want, and then I'm disappointed when what I try to get doesn't give me what I left in order to try to get it.
Yes. So we seem to miss the fact that we already have what we
yes.
want.
Once we turn away from ourselves, which is part of the socialization process. You know, I'm your mother, and I convince you that if you will just do everything I say, if you'll be who I want you to be, I will meet your needs. So you, because surviving is
yes.
high up on our list of activities at every age, you make that agreement. You decide to turn away from yourself and your own authentic nature and turn to me. And of course, the sad part of that is it's never going to work because I can't meet your needs. I may love you more than life itself, but I still can't meet your needs.
Yes.
But we make that turn at such an early age, and very few people go back and rethink it because it's not our moment-by-moment experience that what we seek is within us. We may have split seconds of intuition that could possibly be the case, but our moment-by-moment experience is of the conditioned mind because we
yes.
were conditioned from before the time that we can remember.
Exactly.
Yeah.
From very young.
Very young.
Through our parents, through
exactly.
school, peers.
Yeah. Yeah. So the courageous step that we're trying to take at this ripe old age of whatever we are when we start looking, is to take it on faith that all these people aren't lying to us, that if we give up all of this suffering, we will in fact find there in our essence what we're seeking.
Yes.
And the good news is it never fails. Because it's true.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We think we're taking a huge risk, but it's actually not much of a risk because that's the way life is. That's the way it works.
Wow. It never occurred to me that way.
Yeah.
Because it always feels like a big risk.
Yeah.
But then I always land.
That's right.
Feels like.
That's right.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Good.
Sherry, we have some callers here.
Isn't this good?
Isn't this great? I'd like to welcome Beth from Pittsburgh. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Welcome.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Hi, Beth.
Hi. Just getting out of the Wednesday night sangha, so I find it particularly powerful to call and talk after having sat with the Pittsburgh group.
Okay, so that we don't leave our other listeners in the dust. Sangha, the group of people who meditate together in the Buddhist tradition?
Yes.
Yeah. So you've been off meditating.
Yes.
And now you're back with us. Very good.
Exactly. And I'm finding that meditation brings me back.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes, it does.
We had a discussion about willingness this evening and just watching where the willingness goes.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's very interesting. Most people wonder where it comes from. I think your wondering is going to lead to much more productive pursuits. You're watching to see where it goes.
Right.
Yeah.
Kind of that control thing, you know. Sometimes I try to control the willingness to be where I want it to be,
mm-hmm.
and it's just not there.
Isn't that something? So what can we learn from that? Perhaps that control is futile, as the Borg would tell us. I think it's resistance, though, isn't it, with the Borg? I wish we all got that. Resistance is futile. Can you imagine how easy our lives would be if we all understood that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm finding that I'm going through a great deal of confusion.
Okay. Do you know the Sherry Huber definition of confusion? Looking to your conditioned mind for clarity. Confusion is what most people get into when they know intuitively from their hearts in the moment what is so for them, and then they run that awareness past their conditioning, and they get conditioning's viewpoint, and they think, oh my, now I don't know which one to pick. But, of course, we do when we stop and consider it.
So when I'm in a confused state, it's kind of a sign that I'm in a conditioned state.
That's correct. And the only way, here's what conditioned people want to do. We have a problem or a concern. You know, there's something wrong. Now, all of these things, of course, only exist in conditioning. But when we're in that state, it doesn't occur to us to question the validity of our perception.
It's real.
Yeah. It's real. I'm seeing clearly. This is a problem, and I've got to do something about it.
Yes.
So the thing that we can do, and the only thing that will ever actually give us what we truly want, is to come back to the present. So I have this problem, and what I'm conditioned to do is think about it, make my lists of pros and cons if it's a decision sort of a situation, and check in with all of my friends, whatever my little system is, to try to solve this problem. But the only thing that's actually going to work is to come back to the present. Sit down, grab my little meditation cushion, sit down, and sit still until I'm here in this moment, present, and then look at my situation. Am I still perceiving a problem that I need to solve? Probably not. Now, as soon as I lose focus for a second, I'll be back in conditioned mind, and I'll have the problem again. Now,
that's exactly where I've been.
Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean
that what I'm saying could be interpreted as, and so what you should do is sit down and meditate, and then all of your problems are going to go away, and you do nothing, and eventually you starve to death. That's not it. Life happens, as we've noticed, and there are always directions to go in, and things that we look at and say, well, I think Cleveland instead of Cincinnati, or I want to go back to school, or yes, I want to commit to this relationship. But we're not looking at it from a something wrong mind, from a problem that needs to be solved. We're looking at it as life is unfolding. How can I get in and remain in sync with life?
Ha.
Very different from life as a problem to be solved.
So it doesn't really matter how I'm seeing life, as long as if I'm from center, it's just happening.
That's right. And from center, you'll be seeing life as life happening.
And from conditioning, I'm going to see it as a problem that needs to be solved.
It's a problem, or it's a chance to get ahead or get something for myself or take advantage, or it's from an I, me, my, mine perspective. That's where conditioning lives. When we're at center, life is seen as life. Life is unfolding. Life lives me. I'm a part of all of this. So all of the kinds of right, wrong, shoulds, shouldn'ts, what is life's purpose, what am I meant to do here, all that nonsense, pardon me, but from my perception, nonsense that people get into, is just a waste of time, because when we're in the moment where life is happening, it's just life living. So there, we've cleared that up, eh? Good.
Yeah.
All right, no more confusion,
because it doesn't really matter.
No, the only thing that matters is if we are present, we're not suffering, and if we're not, we are. The content is really irrelevant.
It always seems like center, when I'm there, it's so easy, and it's so easy to find. And when I'm not at center, it seems like it's so far away.
Absolutely. That's true. It's absolutely true. Everything is easy when we're at center. Life is easy. We're easy. We're easy on ourselves, we're easy with ourselves, we're easy with life. It's easy. Seems like we've always been centered and always will be. When we're out of center, center is not even a fantasy. It's not even something desirable. The only thing desirable about it is that it's something else to beat ourselves up over.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I'm not there.
Yeah, I'm not there. I should be. If I were doing it right, I'd be centered. Then I wouldn't be having these problems. This wouldn't be going on. It's all my fault. Yeah. So the trick, and I can say this to you because clearly you're a meditator, get to the cushion, get to the bench, sit down in the chair, meditate until you're present, meditate until all of that falls away, and then there will be clarity about life. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Beth. Sherry, when I read, and I think it was There's Nothing Wrong With You, about confusion and confusion being a good place, let me tell you, there was a lot of relief.
Uh-huh.
Because in our conditioned mind, confusion is not a place that we want to be.
That's right.
If I'm confused, it means I don't know what I'm doing.
That's right.
And when I started to see it as this is conditioned mind and what's going on with the world is sort of not matching up, and that I could come to a place of clarity after coming through confusion, that would be cool.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Great. If you'd like to join us today, please give us a call at 650-723-9010. We'd love to talk with you about whatever's on your mind. And we have another caller here. I'd like to welcome John from Fremont. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Sherry. I've recently started listening to your show, and your words have really helped me.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah. However, there are a few questions I've had. I'm not a meditator. I will be starting soon, so a lot of what I hear is a bit foreign to me and how to apply it to my daily life.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I have trouble really grasping is attachment, how to not attach yourself to anything. It just sounds like a really hard concept to grasp. I really don't know how to do that in this society. You know,
well, John, there are a couple of things, several things, actually, that came over on the first wave of Eastern philosophy that should never have come over, really. One of them is the notion of karma, the other is attachment. empty mind is another one. These things that people hear, ideas, words that people hear, and they're not a part of our orientation to life.
Right.
And so we try to make them mean something in a cultural context that they cannot possibly fit in. So people will pick things like attachment, desirelessness, and make that the heart of awareness practice. And then, of course, it immediately becomes more than they can do.
Right.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
So the with attachment, the one that I see most often is that people become completely attached to the idea of non-attachment.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I felt for me.
Yeah. So that's what they're running around doing. They're trying to see what they're attached to so that they can make that a problem.
Right. Because it almost felt like I had to detach from my feelings of, you know, loving my family or my desires and my wants. You know, it almost felt like I almost had to have no feelings.
Yeah.
And so that was just really confusing because I can't conceive doing that.
Yeah. Now, John, the big thing we have to watch out for. So you're kind of hip to the whole mind, small mind, or conditioned mind and essential nature distinction that I keep making?
Yeah, somewhat.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I can promise you, unless you are different from all the rest of us, conditioned mind is the one who's going to try to do your awareness practice, which, if you consider it for a second, is a very scary thing.
Yeah.
Now, of course, the place we get to is, well, what else is going to do it? Right? Mm-hmm. Because your essential nature doesn't have a desire to do anything.
Right.
Okay, so you have something caused you to want to awaken, however you want to talk about that. But something shifted around in you, and suddenly it occurred to you that you'd like to know how life works, and you'd like to be more free than you are, and why not awaken? And maybe liberation could be a good idea. So that spark, whatever that was that caused that shift, is what we're going for. Now, as soon as that spark happened, conditioned mind grabbed it and started running with it. Okay, well, it means this, and then you have to do this, and you need to focus on that, and you're doing that, and you shouldn't be doing that, and this is, okay. So the first thing that we have to catch on to is that none of that is true, real, or helpful. Okay, so what we're going for, and the reason that meditation is so important, we're going for the gaps, the spaces. Okay, those little split seconds when nothing is going on. And then you'll notice that what follows that is just being inundated with all of that mind chatter. So if you realize, now I know it's kind of, it feels kind of shaky, because for most of us, until we begin to catch on to this, conditioned mind is who we are.
Yeah.
It is our friend. It's our guide. It's our knowing. It's our conscience. It's everything to us.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're starting to get information that, no, in fact, it's the cause of my suffering. It's not real. It's not wise. It's not helpful.
Mm.
So there's that little period of time where, okay, I'm going to let go of what I've been holding on to, and I don't have anything new to grab onto. And it feels a little insecure out there.
Yeah, it's really scary. It's a really scary thought, because it just feels like what I think and what I do is my way to survive. You know, it's what I've done in order to get by.
Yes.
And to let go of that, it's, well, that means I'm not surviving. That means I'm just putting myself out there without any kind of buffer, you know, between me and
That's
anything
right.
that can hurt me.
That's right.
It's a really scary thought.
It's very scary. So my encouragement is don't do that.
Don't do that.
All right. And now that's what your conditioned mind would have you to believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you're going to have to let go. You've got to cut off from your family and all of your friends and probably quit your job and sell everything you have and give all the money to the poor and then go off into the woods and
right.
starve to death. Okay.
Right.
There. Now you're a real spiritual student. Okay.
Yeah.
My take on it is a little easier than that. And that is, let everything go on exactly as it has always gone on, and you just watch it. Instead of being inside it, believing it, caught up, you know, all those taking it personally and that kind of thing that we do when we're inside conditioned mind, what you're going to do is just move into an observer position. And just watch John go about living his life. Watch what he thinks, what he feels, what he does, what he believes, how he reacts, how he gets caught up, the times when he's happy and when he's not, when he feels peaceful, when he's relaxed, when he's tight, when he's tense. Just watch. Just become the world's foremost expert on John. Now, of course, you, before you decided to wake up, might have thought you are an expert on John. After all, you've known him all your life, right? But when we start to wake up, we get it. No, I don't know who I am.
Yeah,
I've never really paid that close attention.
Yeah.
So it's much easier than conditioning would have you believe. It's good to take notes, you know.
Yeah.
Watch, observe all of these things. You're a scientist. You're an alien from another planet. You just drop down and you're going to watch this guy to find out what human beings are like. Judgment isn't necessary. You don't have to make any decisions. You don't have to take any action. All you're doing is fact-finding.
And how do I know when I'm watching myself and not when conditioning is watching myself, you know, and judging? Because sometimes you don't know you're judging yourself. Sometimes you don't know you're making yourself feel bad.
That's right.
So
that's right.
How do I just kind of create that unbiased feeling where I'm just watching myself without really putting thought
well,
into it?
Yeah. Now, of course, meditation is the fast track.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why we do it, because when we sit, we're practicing dropping everything, coming back, and focusing on the breath.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mind wanders, goes off for whatever period of time. We catch ourselves. We come back to the breath.
Mm-hmm.
And as we practice that, we find ourselves more able to be present for longer periods of time. Now, how all of this will work is that slowly, over time, you're going to see what's what. So patience, two things that I heartily recommend for anybody who's going to take up an awareness practice. Patience and a sense of humor. And that conditioning makes this stuff grisly.
Yeah.
It's grim, it's serious, it's
right.
joyless. No. Conditioned mind is grim and joyless.
Mm-hmm.
Awareness is joyful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what you're doing is learning to see what's what. So you don't realize that you're being judged.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day you'll get it. You'll see it.
Mm.
Oh, gee whiz, I thought that was just helpful information.
Yeah.
It's really hateful.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and so then you know. And only conditioning wants to go quickly.
Mm.
The heart is timeless.
Mm.
Yeah, and what we're practicing, of course, is conscious, compassionate awareness.
Mm-hmm.
So day by day, you just go along, coming back to the breath, to conscious, compassionate awareness, as often as you can. Say thank you when you get there. You know, notice when you're gone. Yeah. It's a good deal.
Okay. Well, thank you, Sherry.
Thank you. Keep in touch and let us know how it goes.
Sure, I will.
All right. Thanks, John. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, John. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Sherry, some really interesting stuff came up there. And it was interesting to me, that place where we start our practice, we have only one choice, which is to start with conditioned mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Because for most of us,
we're not in touch with what is actually guiding and directing us. Mm. We don't recognize it for what it is, because conditioned mind takes credit for everything. So yes, it suddenly occurs to me that I would like to see if I could suffer less, or I would like to, you know, it's often not framed that way, you know. Well, I'd like to be a little more relaxed, or I'd like to be a nicer person. I'd like to be more loving to my family and friends. I'd like to make a difference in the world. We don't recognize that that's the heart guiding us.
Yes.
We're already there. We're there. We just had an enlightenment experience.
Yeah.
But conditioning will just hop right on and say, oh, well, that's a good idea, and here's the way to do it. And the reason that you should do it is because you're really a low life and always have been, and a selfish, egocentric, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And we accept that as all one piece.
Yeah.
Not information came through from where.
Mm.
It felt right. It felt kind. It felt, I was uplifted for a moment. I was hopeful, optimistic, and excited. And then all of this other stuff comes in on the heels of that.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite so sure or happy I'm not certain I'm even worthy of the endeavor. So after we've been practicing for a while, we're more present. We're watching these kinds of awarenesses and then the thoughts that follow them. We can recognize what comes from where. But in the beginning, we can't.
Yeah. So as you were talking, it's sort of, you get this little message from your heart, and then it gets swallowed up.
Yeah.
Every beliefs, assumptions,
buried.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I should improve myself or relax more. It's probably not going to work, but I should try anyway.
Exactly.
Lots of different ideas.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Christian notion of the still small voice.
Yes.
Trying to point out there is communication.
Mm.
It's nothing like the communication that we're used to.
Yes.
Because conditioned mind is screaming at us, manipulating us, threatening us, telling us all kinds of horrible, scary things about ourselves and everybody else and the future and the past. And it's not a pleasant communication. So how do we point at that other communication that we're constantly receiving?
Mm.
We're never out of touch with it, but we just don't recognize it.
So we learn to get in touch with that still, small voice, learn how to pay attention to that, learn how to live from that place.
Yes, and how not to believe and take personally and get caught up in the insanity of our conditioned minds.
Yeah, and over time we learn to differentiate between, you know, which messages are coming from where.
Yes.
Yeah. Fascinating. And I was thinking during John's call about, as we do the practice more, and I was thinking about the previous caller too, in terms of the language that came over, the concepts that came over as you talked about attachment. And I was thinking about, you know, a concept that I've heard, you know, losing my identity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's scary.
Yes. Yes, it is.
And so I was thinking, you know, that can be framed in another way.
Yes.
Which is, you know, be happier or...
Right.
Or come back to my essential nature.
Yes.
Or live from my heart.
Yes. Yeah. But lose my identity? Who wants to do that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, of course, if we consider that the identity that people are pointing at with something like that is synonymous with suffering...
Yes.
We could say, oh, well, then perhaps losing that is a good idea. But as John, as we're looking at with John, okay, and what's going to replace that? Okay, I'm going to lose this. All right, so I'm suffering, but at least I'm somebody.
I know who I am.
I know who I am. And so now I'm going to give that up and what? Be nothing? And of course, that question comes from conditioning, from the conditioned mind that says, without me, you are nothing.
Yes.
Which is really interesting. You know, a lot of the work that we do is with what I call self-hatred, which seems like a strong term to people until they really tune into what goes on in conditioned mind. And one of the things about an abusive situation, you know, if we're in a an abusive relationship, whether yes. I'm smacking you around or just mentally and emotionally abusing you. One of the things that I communicate to you to make sure that you don't get other ideas is that you're really lucky to have me. Who else is going to have you? Nobody would want somebody like you. It's the same process inside our minds.
Mm-hmm.
So conditioning will tell us that, all right, I might not be the kindest person in the world, but without me, you are nothing. I'm your personality. I'm your intelligence. I'm the heart of your relationships with other people. I'm what makes you successful at work to the degree that you are, you loser. So you may not be thrilled with me, but I'm the best thing you've got. And we stay frightened in that place for a while until,
yes.
and as we say in Buddhism, until we've suffered enough, until we get to the point of being so sick of the abuse that, fine, I'm willing to risk being without this and being nothing for a while. It sounds restful. And, of course, what we find when we have just the moment of stepping free of that is that. It's freedom, just expansiveness, joy, relaxation, peace, connectedness. And we, okay, this is nothing. I'm taking it.
I'll take it.
I'll take it because, of course, that nothingness that we fear is actually everything. So when I get free from a small, limited identification as this little separate self that suffers, what I tap into is everything.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's a good trade-off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Little personality, whole mind.
Yes.
Gosh, which shall I pick?
Yeah. And it seems that, in my experience, the big leap is just being willing to look at all, just being willing to question, being willing to examine.
Yeah.
I mean, once you get, you know, a little past that, you can start to see, you know, there's some chinks in the armor there.
Yes. And I think once we get to that point, it ceases to be frightening and starts being exciting.
Interesting.
This is interesting, yeah. This is a... Well, interesting, no, too mild for me. Exciting, thrilling, challenging, all of those things that we always hope and wish life will be, but we're afraid to step out there because they might be, it might be too much that way. You know, there might be a loss of control. And when we step beyond that point of being afraid of loss and we get fascinated with how life works and what is possible and what's going on here, it's
a good time.
It's a good time. Yeah. Which is why conditioned mind wants us to believe that it's grim and
dreary
and horrible and we'll just die of boredom. Because once we catch on to what a good time it is, we're not going to go back.
We're not going back.
No. No.
Great. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. If you'd like to join our conversation tonight, please give us a call. You can reach us at 650-723-9010. Next up at 6 p.m., we'll have Brownie in Motion with Your Imaginary Friend, followed by Wednesday Night Live with Drums Horse. At 10 p.m., Kathleen will be on with Fine Tuning Utopia. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to your calls in just a moment. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. We've been talking about lots of interesting stuff tonight, and we have an email question here from one of our listeners. Dear Sherry, first off, I'd like to say that you're awesome. There's this movie title that reminds me of you. It's called There's Something About Mary. I think to myself, there's something about Sherry.
Well, how kind. How very kind.
Yes. I've observed over some time that I have fixed emotional thought behavior patterns that create a very rigid sense of identity. However, there have been a few times when I've spontaneously gone beyond that, when I've experienced a very different state of consciousness that creates a new identity and a new reality. These rare experiences have given me the impression that I have absolutely no control over my unfoldment, over my evolution. So what's the point of meditating? How does... We'll transition there.
That's good.
How does awareness lead to change and freedom? For me, it seems that if your emotions don't change, nothing else changes. I may be aware of my emotions, but so what? Sincerely, a listener.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's interesting. Now, there are a lot of points. You're going to have to help me cover them. It seems to me that what's fundamental to that is that I can be in two places. I can be identified with my emotions. I find emotions fascinating. When I look at emotion, I actually can't find anything other than physical sensations combined with a story. Okay. Now, I know that sets a lot of people off because one of the things that is true for us conditioned human beings is that emotion makes things real. Okay. So if I am feeling an emotion, this is real, this is important. If I'm not feeling an emotion, it's not real, it's not important, and I'm moving on. Now, is that true? No. There's no absolutely no truth to it whatsoever because so much of what we call emotion, from my perspective, is conditioning. Something happens, and I am conditioned to react in a particular way. So the energy moves through my body. I feel the sensations. I call it X. The story that goes with it is this, and I'm having this emotional experience. So I can be caught in that, believing it, inside it, this is true, this is reality. Or I can be, as we were talking about a minute ago with John, I can be stepped back, watching how that's happening. In my lingo, we talk about it, about that as being disidentified. So I'm either identified, believing it, acting it out, or I'm disidentified. I'm stepped back. I'm watching it. It's not that I step back in order to stop it, but I'm watching it rather than believing it. That's a tremendous difference in our lives.
Yes.
Well, to me, from that disidentified place, we can see that this reaction is one of an infinite number of possible reactions to have. It's not real in the sense that it is the only possible reaction to this situation. In fact, if I'm present, I might have, again, any of a vast range of responses to the moment rather than a reaction that is conditioned.
So there could be a reaction from the conditioned mind, or there's a sense of stepping back, being disidentified from that, and responding.
Responding with whatever the moment calls for.
Yes.
Yeah. Being responsive to the moment, in the moment.
Yeah. Word that comes to mind to me is appropriate.
Yes. Yeah. Because when we're present, we are always appropriate because we are part of the moment that is unfolding.
Yes.
So to me, meditation is such an assistance in this because it teaches us to be present and to pay attention, not to go unconscious and get caught up in the distractions of conditioning, but to actually be here as life unfolds. So I'm here and something happens and I watch that progression of sensations and thoughts and emotional reactions and behaviors that arise in me. And that very presence and ability to watch from that disidentified place gives me a different relationship with life. The first, to me, and most compelling difference is I don't get caught in a story. So if someone says something to me and I'm not paying attention, I'm not here, conditioning is going to take over and define what that interaction is, what the person said, what they meant, what it means, how I should feel about it, what I should do, what it means if I don't do, what it means if I do, a whole story. And for most of us, once we start paying attention, we realize these stories are not new.
I've been caught in this story for as long as I can remember.
Yes.
But somebody says something to me, and I'm disidentified. I am present. I am here. And I simply watch what arises. No story, no belief system, nothing to defend, nothing to maintain. A completely different relationship.
Different relationship to our emotions.
Yes. Yes. To everything.
To everything. And as you said earlier, I'm writing the math equation here, which is that emotions equals physical sensations plus the story. And so there's a part of me that's just ready to X out the story.
The story is completely unnecessary.
It's unnecessary.
Yes. All it does is perpetuate suffering. Now, remember earlier, we had another math equation. Suffering equals identity. So the story maintains a me. This is who I am. This is how I feel. This is what I think. This is what I do. This is what it's always been. You know, my relationships have always been this way. People always say those kinds of things. It just happens over and over. Without that story, without that meaning, somebody just said something.
And you're free. Okay.
And you're free. It takes about 15 seconds as compared to days or weeks or months or years.
Yes.
Now I'm free of that. I don't have to do that. I don't have to engage in that or indulge that. I can just be here with whatever is going on in this moment. I can take care of the part of me who is here and perhaps reacting to that. There might be many parts of me who want to react to what that person said. I can be present to all of that. I can see my whole karma, the whole story and the meaning right there in front of me. And I can decide whether I want to go with that, continue to suffer over it, or whether I'd rather be here in this moment with what this moment offers.
Yes. So we can be here in the moment with the physical sensations, whatever's going on.
Yeah.
Or we can take the physical sensations, label them, run off with the story.
Yeah. So it, in this moment, it might occur to me, rather than that person just said it because they don't like me and they have no respect for me and they've never wanted me around, just like my mother never wanted me around and like all of the people in sixth grade who, it might occur to me to say to the person, wow, that feels really hurtful to me. Can you tell me what you meant by that? And the person might say, oh, I wasn't talking to you. I was just thinking out loud about.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it never even occurs to us to
never
check that out.
No.
Explore
we're
what's going
off,
on.
We're busy running with our story.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, the person might say, I was talking to you. I've never liked you. There's really something about you that sets me off. Now, with awareness practice, you know, we get to, we have several things that we can fall back on in those tragic moments when people say those kinds of things to us. And when's the last time anybody said anything remotely like that to you, you know?
Yes.
It happens so rarely to us in adulthood. We're tensed up against it as if it happens every 5 or 10 minutes. But in fact, you know, once a year, 5 years, 10 years.
Right. So I'm going to stay tensed up all year for that one moment.
That somebody, in fact, might say something
might
to
me. Might say something.
Yeah. And so if we understand projection, then we can understand that, well, gosh, that person seems to have something going on that they seem to be projecting onto me. If we understand ourselves, we can say, wow, now where would I be in my life to say something like that? So I can project back onto them. And I might want to review all of the times that I said or thought something like that to or about another person and think, well, I can understand somebody getting into that place.
Yes.
I might think about how I would like to be treated after I said something like that.
Uh-huh.
And then I might try treating that person the way I would like to be treated.
Yes.
And they're just infinite possibilities that open up to us when we're not simply interested in maintaining our story.
Yes, yes. And you mentioned projection there. For our listeners, can you elaborate a little bit on projection and how that works?
Yeah. Starting to get it that I'm creating the world that I live in.
Mm.
Nobody else lives in the world that I live in. Nobody. Now, I find as many people as I can who have similar beliefs and assumptions, and I choose for them to people my world, because then when I look out at the world, I can say, do you see what I see? And because they have the same conditioning I have, they'll say, yes, I see what you see. And that's why we like to hang around with people who agree with us. But nobody lives in my world. I'm the only one with this particular set of beliefs and assumptions and abilities and projections and stories and all of that sort of thing. So as I begin to realize that, I get a sense that, wow, every relationship, every interaction, everything, I'm creating it. I'm putting the juice in this. I'm holding this structure in place, and you're doing the same thing.
Mm.
So I can start looking at what you're saying and doing, knowing that I'm projecting, but trying to see if I can get a sense of what kind of world you live in,
yes,
based on what you're saying and what you're doing.
Yes.
And it's a much happier pursuit than trying to determine what's wrong with you.
Yes. Yes.
Which is where a lot of conditioned minds, time and energy goes.
Yeah. And as you were talking, it made me think that it's all this looking outward, like what's wrong out there, and
yes,
and we're holding in place this identity internally.
Yes, yes. Well, we're holding it in place, and we're projecting it out.
Yes.
So we're trying to create a world that maintains us, creating a world out there that maintains this structure, and it's exhausting. And it's unnecessary. So if we stop, we can relax all those muscles that we're using to hold these structures in place. We can just relax. Yeah. We can let the world be what it is. Let life be what it is. Let people be who they are. And can you imagine walking around in life really getting it? I don't know what's going on. I don't know what people are doing. I don't know what's motivating them. I don't know what they're thinking. I don't know what they're feeling.
Yes.
I have no idea.
Yes.
Instead of projecting onto them and really believing that they are who I project them to be,
yes,
and the most deadly of all, believing that they are who I project them to be and that it has nothing to do with me.
Mm.
They are, and I'm not.
Uh-huh.
Ooh, it's a rugged, wicked, suffering,
it's a dangerous
game.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. If you'd like to join our conversation this week or next week, you can call us at 650-723-9010. We'll also be doing a special email-only show in the future, so please send us any email questions that you have, and Sherry will address those on air. Our email address is openair@kzsu.org. Our phone number, I'm not sure if I gave out our phone number, is 650-723-9010.
I think you can't give it out too often.
Too often.
Yeah.
Exactly. And Sherry, as you were talking before about staying with the physical sensations, and for me personally, that's been incredibly valuable instead of going with that whole story about what the emotion is. And the one example that I always love is, you know, what is excitement and what is fear?
Mm-hmm.
So there's all this energy running through my body, adrenaline, whatever, and I'm in this circumstance, and I call it excitement, and I'm in another place, and I call it fear.
Yeah, usually divided by this, I want this. this is something that I'm pursuing and I want, and I'm getting close to it, so I call that excitement or anticipation.
Yes.
And over here, it's something I don't want. So those very same sensations mean I'm in trouble, there's something wrong here, I need to get away, I don't like this, I don't want this.
Mm.
And the body is feeling exactly the same thing.
Yes.
And, we can know that because there are an awful lot of people who do, by choice, things that other people are terrified of.
Yes.
So
lots of folks are afraid of heights, and then there are the people who jump out of airplanes.
Yes.
For fun.
Yes.
Now you
repeatedly.
Know, repeatedly. You know that when that adrenaline is rushing through their body, they're having a good time.
Yes.
Yeah, they're not living in some kind of terror that maybe you and I would be experiencing if we were falling from a high place.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's much more a matter of what goes on in the mind than what goes on in the body.
Yes.
Yeah. So people even pursue pain in many situations and enjoy it. Call it a good time. They're having fun. And then other times, an equal amount of pain is not what they want. They don't like it. I'm not having fun. This is a bad, terrible, horrible thing, and I have to suffer.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So there's an illusion of control, that I have control over what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
In the example with excitement, I have control over this. And with the fear, I project I don't have control.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yet, in both
cases,
well,
or even if it's not a matter of control, I want this.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I may not have control over whether or not I get this thing that I want, but I want it. So
yes.
There's no resistance to it. In
uh-huh.
this other one, yes, I bet I would feel out of control. That's a huge part of what fear is. Something's going to happen, and I have no ability to influence that, to protect myself from it.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Fascinating. Sherry, we're close to the end of our hour here. You can join us again next week at 5 p.m. at 90.1 on the FM dial. I'd like to thank our callers and our listeners today. If you'd like to join us next week, you can call us at 650-723-9010. If you want to drop us an email, please do that. You can reach us at openair@kzsu.org. Sherry, you have a new website.
Yes, I do.
Has some great stuff on
SherryHuber.com,
SherryHuber.com, CHERIHUBER.com. Next up, we have Brownie in Motion with Your Imaginary Friend, 9 p.m. Wednesday Night Live with Drums Horse, 10 p.m. Kathleen with Fine Tuning Utopia. We'll see you again next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.